Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Each Monday, we're going to invite political scientists, analysts, opinion leaders, journalists to the show to ask some probing questions about the politics of the week. And boy, there is a lot to cover today. This is also a chance for you to get some context on the political events that are moving quickly. And here's something I'd ask you to think about today. As you watch Donald Trump's presidency enter its second full week, right, only the second full week, are you learning more about the way he's going to govern? If you voted for President Trump, do you think he's prioritizing the right things? I think your voices are important to this conversation, too. So whether you voted for President Trump or not, are you learning more about the way he's going to govern? And if you supported him and you still support him, do you think he is prioritizing the right things? 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000 on Twitter at Carrie NPR. Christina Greer is with us. She's a political science professor at Fordham University and the author of Black Ethnics. And she's with us today from New York City. Christina, welcome back to the show. Good to have you here.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Mary Kate Carey is with us. She's a senior fellow for presidential studies at the University of Virginia. She's a former speechwriter for President George H.W. Bush, and she's with us today from Washington. And Mary Kate, welcome back. Good to have you on the show as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
Mary Kate, you've seen a White House work up close, you know, as a speechwriter for President Bush. Is the pace with which Donald Trump is doing these things unusual?
Yeah, I would say it is. And what's most startling to me is the pace of the announcements and the executive orders. The executive orders most presidents do as soon as they come in office, it's just the attention being paid to these is higher than usual. And yet it's at the same time that there is really just a skeleton staff at the White House. Most of the cabinet has not been confirmed. And I think that's adding to I don't know what the word is for this.
The controversy?
The controversy. There we
yeah.
go. And I think the faster we can get, say, speechwriters and researchers who are fact-checking and a policy apparatus and a fully confirmed cabinet around him, I think some of this will die down.
Although, Christina, I have to say, I think there's controversy because of not just because he doesn't have enough of a staff around him, but also because of what he's doing, right? What he's decided to do first.
Well, I mean, I definitely think, though, you know, when you don't have a qualified staff or staff at all, that does dictate some of your agenda. And so what he's chosen to do is largely put forth by some people who actually don't understand how Washington, D.C. and the three branches of government actually work. So we have someone like Rudy Giuliani, who's not sort of a policymaker in Washington, D.C., who is essentially saying the loud part quiet constantly, you know, by saying, you
that's
know,
a great phrase, Christina. I love that.
Saying the quiet part loud and the loud part
yeah,
quiet.
That's good.
But I mean, he's consistently, you know, said this weekend that this was actually the intent. You know, they didn't think that they'd be able to get the Muslim ban, so let's go, you know, sort of backdoor it. This is not something that we've necessarily seen in recent memory. I mean, we're essentially rolling back to, you know, some of the segregationist and quite honestly racist practices that we saw in the 1800s and the early 1920s.
Call here from Jennifer in Woodbury. Jennifer, you supported President Trump, voted for him. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Tell me what you're thinking about these early days.
You know, he was voted in to make a change and to kind of put a halt to the socialist theories that the United States was headed into our democratic society. And I believe that he wants to first secure our United States. Let's slow things down in the direction it was going, and let's get a grasp on us. Let's figure out America now and not where it was headed and bring it back to the roots.
So you like
that
what he's
any,
you like what he's prioritizing, it sounds like. Okay. All right.
I do. And, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with racism. It has everything to do with let's secure us. Let's get a grasp on us.
Okay.
Let's help our health care. Let's help, you know, let's help our infrastructure. Let's help us.
All right. I really appreciate the call, Jennifer. I'm going to go to Bill in Mankato. Bill, it sounds like you were also, or and are also, a Trump supporter, yes?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I think the media has been real unfair to Trump so far. But, you know, just, y'all are really letting this stuff go unchallenged, helping normalize white supremacy and Nazism in the U.S. Like, that is literally what is going on, and your corporate shareholders don't even...
Bill, I'm confused. I thought you were a Trump supporter.
No, ma'am. Only a psychopath on a good day would support Trump.
Oh,
he's literally a Nazi, and you people...
Okay, Bill, I think you've called before. Does not advance the conversation. Let me go to Dan in Minneapolis. Hey, Dan, hi. What are your thoughts? Hey, Dan, are you there? Okay. We're having some phone problems here. We got a lot of calls coming in. We'll try to catch up a little bit. Christina, I guess I would ask you what you think about what Jennifer said. This is what I voted for. I wanted change.
Right, but I'd ask Jennifer, who's the us that she's talking about? You know, I mean, when you really think about the real principles of American democracy, it's based on supposedly immigration. I mean, I bet you Jennifer's ancestors came here as immigrants. You know, mine didn't. They were involuntary immigrants because they came here part of, you know, white supremacy and the foundations of American quote-unquote democracy, which is anti-black racism and white supremacy. So, like, these are things that we have to contend with the history of this nation. That doesn't mean that we can't move forward. But when she's saying we need to get back to our values for us, our values for us are supposed to be taking care of one another. This country does not work if we have people only looking out for themselves and not the collective. This is why we have a federalist system. This is why the states aren't completely autonomous. This is why we contribute money and resources to a national government to support others. People in New York City, downstate, pay for things that go on upstate. People in the state of New York pay for things that happen in Mississippi. This is fine. This is how our country is supposed to work. The way that Trump is sort of in his imagination trying to set things up. And mind you now, this is a man who does not have a grasp of the U.S. Constitution. And this is probably one of the first times in recent memory where we've seen someone who does not understand not only the U.S. Constitution, not only the three branches of government, not only separation of powers, but what the intrinsic philosophy of this country is. And if you don't understand the philosophy of this country, then you are directly working against it. So all the people who went to the polls to vote for Donald Trump for quote-unquote economic issues to get back to our real values, if you look at the real history of our country, our real values are about a collective identity that has not necessarily been played out because of, quite honestly, racist and, you know, and sort of gendered politics. We are moving in a progressive direction that must be shared. And I think that's the worrisome part, where so many people do not feel like they need to contribute to the larger whole. And if we don't do that, then we fail as a nation.
Chris in Maple Grove says, I agree with Derek. It seems like there's a lot of spin on every news story. I used to listen to NPR, but it seems that there are never any pro-Trump supporters. I hope you're still listening, Chris, because you're hearing those voices. Mary Kate, do you think, given what Christina just said, which is kind of the big picture, when you dial down to what supporters are thinking of the first 10 days, I'm seeing polls that say his loyalists, his base, like what he's doing.
I have to agree. I am in the Derek camp on this. I was not a Trump supporter, but I do think that the overblown public reaction, mostly through the media and columnists and the sort of chattering class in Washington, is just feeding the problem. You know, Christine, you just used the word racist, I think, three times, white supremacy twice, and that makes people not want to argue back, because if I were to give a reasonable argument right now on why I think that Donald Trump is acting within the Constitution, I would assume that you're going to think I'm a racist. And so, therefore, it makes me not want to say anything. So the level of, as Derek put it, hair on fire type of rhetoric is not advancing our democracy. And I think if we can dial things back a little and, you know, the people who say, for example, he's not my president, that to me is very disturbing, because he's sworn in. He is our president. And we all have to somehow figure out a way to come together. And we don't have to agree with everything he's doing, But the level of rhetoric is really alarming to me, and I think it's fueling the backlash against the media and against some of the people on the left. You know, the SAG Awards last night are a great example. I mean, it just makes you want to turn off the TV because you don't want to be called all these horrible names if you think, well, let's give them a chance or let's see how it goes. And that's what's bothering me about the level of discourse in Washington this last week.
Yeah, Mary Kate and Christina, I'm participating in a new national call-in show, and on Thursday nights, my frame is identity. And we took so many, I think, just terrific and insightful calls on Thursday, because I was asking people, if you voted for Trump, what is it that people don't understand about you? And, you know, what kind of misperceptions do you think exist out there about you? And I pulled a couple of the calls because I wanted you both to be able to hear what people were saying. This first one is a young woman in North Carolina who did support Donald Trump, but she says, hey, there's a lot more to my life than just that. Listen.
I had the opportunity to spend Christmas, you know, several Christmas invitations from friends and family, and the people that I felt closest to that I wanted to spend Christmas this year with was one of my best friends and his Mexican husband. So, you know, as far as not fitting the stereotype, I just feel like sometimes people assume that you're racist or whatever, homophobic or bigot or whatever, when you vote for Trump.
So, Christina, what would you say about that and to what Mary Kate said, that when you throw that out there, you immediately shut down any kind of discussion between voters?
Well, I would argue that when we're talking about a candidate who throws out there that Mexicans are rapists and all Muslims are terrorists, then that shuts down a conversation as well. Or that all the blacks live in the inner city in the ghettos and need jobs. I mean, I think we need to look at where the root of the rhetoric is coming from. I don't know what kind of mental gymnastics people are doing these days to sort of justify that this president is saying things that are actually bringing our country together. We have never seen a presidential candidate or a president in the latter 20th or 21st century who has said the type of vitriol against multiple groups of people. So I'm sorry if certain people's feelings are hurt, but they need to look at their particular candidate. Sure, he won. He won on divisive politics. You have to own that. He did not win on bringing this country together. He won on throwing people out, sort of make it great again. We know that that slogan is from George Wallace, a known racist and segregationist. We know that that slogan's from Ronald Reagan.
But let me, Christina, let me ask you this, though. I mean, our discussion on Thursday, and I think where we're moving right now is, that's him. Does that automatically mean that if you voted for Donald Trump, you automatically have to take on all of the labels and you have to, you know, carry the vitriol that he spread around as a voter?
You have to own that. You cannot completely absolve yourself from it. Yeah, I could see if this was a one-off comment. I didn't agree with everything that George Bush did. I didn't agree with everything that Barack Obama did. But, you know, for the most part, sure, you have to take the good and the bad. This is not the same example. This is a man who consistently makes his entire message one about division. So you have to own these types of things that he's saying that are literally ripping people's lives and families apart. If you want to say that it's about economics or that's just one small part of it, that's his agenda. When you have known white supremacists in your cabinet and in the White House, you have to own that. You can't say that it's a fluke.
Mary Kay?
I'm not sure. It's painting with a very broad brush. If the situation was reversed and Hillary Clinton had won, I don't think we would be saying that all Hillary Clinton supporters have to own everything that she stood for.
She didn't call Mexicans rapists and try and kick out Muslims.
No, she didn't. She didn't. But I'm just saying that's a difficult thing, because I don't think anybody really thought this was a great choice between these two candidates. I don't think anybody really felt like either one of these candidates was 100% great. And so it's a broad brush to say you own everything either side had said. I'm not convinced. I haven't seen the evidence for some of the labels that are being used about some of these people. You know, Steve Bannon, for example, a highly controversial guy, and yet I have yet to see anything that shows me what he has said that made him a white supremacist. I think there were things that were published on Breitbart that upset people, but he certainly didn't write them. And I think he was sort of a money guy from Goldman Sachs. I assume he was one of the investors. So the jury's still out for me on any of these people yet to do anything that lives up to the reputation that they've been given so far in the press. I'm not sold yet. I'm happy to be convinced, but right now I just think it's, like I said, so vitriolic. It's only been 1 week. And by the way, Carrie, real quick, to the previous conversation you had with Ken, regarding Steve Bannon. So President Bush 41 had a National Security Council that was big, and there was always a concern about too many people being in the room. Mm-hmm. So he did two things. Scowcroft created the Deputies Committee, which has lived on through administrations following that. The Deputies Committee is where a lot of the action is, and I believe Trump has not yet reinstalled it. But he had a small group that was sort of the dream team of his kitchen cabinet on national security. And I think that's where John Sununu, the chief of staff, was always in those meetings. And so I think there's plenty of precedent for somebody on the White House staff to be in the smaller NSC meetings. There's many pictures of Colin Powell, you know, Condi Rice, Jim Baker, Dan Quayle, John Sununu, all being in the meetings deciding the Persian Gulf War. So that to me is not unprecedented or alarming in any way, because somebody from the White House staff is always in those meetings.
Although I think the concern was that Bannon takes a space and it relieves the chair of the Joint Chiefs from having to be there, and he will be there on an as-needed kind of basis. Isn't
right.
that unusual?
Yeah, I think that is, but it may be a function of the personalities, that for example, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs when we were there was Colin Powell, and you would want somebody like that in the room all the time. But whether you need the current one, I don't know if it's a function of one of the callers was saying, if there's a hurricane, you really need the Joint Chiefs in the room?
Right.
So it may be that sort of flexibility that they were looking for.
Kimberly says on Twitter, if you voted for Trump, it does not mean you're a racist, but it does mean you decided his racism was not a deal breaker for you. I want to let you know, for everybody that's tweeting in here and listening to this conversation, this is exactly the kind of stuff we're talking about on Thursday nights on Indivisible at 7. So I hope you'll tweet in and call in for those conversations as well. To the phones, to Luke in Victoria. Hi, Luke. Thanks so much for waiting.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I think your panelist, who was just done speaking just a moment ago, I'm not smart enough to know what that word vitriolic means, but I'll use the word cautiously optimistic. I was heading to vote for Trump the morning of the election, and my wife and I had a discussion and said, you know, Trump is an individual, as we have our own Christian faith. Trump as an individual doesn't fit. In other words, we don't like him as an individual, so we couldn't end up voting for him. We ended up voting third party. But I will have to say, though, this immigration answer or executive order kind of makes sense a little bit to me. And this is where I'm cautiously optimistic, because it really we're fighting an ideology that is an enemy without a uniform. And it really only takes one or two strategically placed individuals to really affect my life with my young three children as we go to a mall, as we go to any of these places. We live down the road from the Mall of America, and I haven't been there in a long time because of it's just not worth it. It's not worth the risk of someone who's not willing to identify themselves as a uniformed opposition. I think you know where I'm going. I'm rambling here, but my point is for national security reasons, this could be maybe what we need until we can figure out a solution and an answer to what's happening with. And unfortunately, the opposition has chosen to align themselves with a sect of Islam. That's no one else's fault but their own.
Okay.
They're the ones that are saying we're part of this faith. And yet all of us that are feeling uncomfortable with being attacked are all of a sudden racist because that's how they're identifying themselves.
Luke, I appreciate the call. I want to grab Denise here in Mound. Hey, Denise, hi. Thank you for waiting. I know it's been a while.
Hi.
Hi. What did you want to say? You supported Donald Trump, is that right?
Yes, I did, and I do. And I'm just want to say that I'm a working class person. I've been a house painter almost all my life. I've struggled to get jobs. I've struggled to get health insurance. I know many other people that have. I've also struggled with my children's fathers becoming addicted to drugs. And so I'm ready for a change. I work 52 hours a week, and I currently, or I recently went and got my degree in human services, mm-hmm. and I am also working a part-time job at Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation for Addiction. So I just feel that Trump is willing to do something to take care of Americans, because Americans, I believe, have been suffering, and it's not really, we're not being taken care of here, like the veterans and the drug addiction crisis that we have, and the people who are working 52 hours a week trying to get health care insurance, trying to provide for their children whose fathers may be in jail or incarcerated or have left because of drug addiction. It's just really difficult for a lot of us.
This was an economic decision for you, Denise. Can I ask you a question about, you've mentioned health insurance a couple of times. Did you get health insurance through MNsure, through the healthcare exchange in this state?
Not MNsure. I did qualify for medical assistance for a little while there. And then I went over the amount by a very little bit amount, and so I was unqualified for health care insurance, and now I owe thousands of dollars for medical bills. Right now, though, since I started the Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation, I do have insurance.
You have insurance.
But
the premiums
and the rates are very high.
I asked you that because you know that the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare, provided health insurance for people that didn't have insurance.
Right.
And you didn't support that.
I didn't, because I went online and looked at the rates. The monthly, what they wanted for was $400 a month, which I could not afford to get health care insurance. Mm-hmm.
Christina, what do you hear in our last two callers who support the president?
Well, I mean, the last caller, I just don't understand, because Donald Trump ran on the fact that he's going to get rid of health care and he had nothing in place to remove it. I'm also just dumbfounded about how someone supports someone who's 70 years old and has zero history of ever helping or speaking to people who have less than him. I mean, this is literally a man who lives in a tower of gold and has never once actually reached out and tried to help Americans. So this newfound either inspiration or ability to do so, to me, is the antithesis of what we're going to see. I mean, Barack Obama, you know, with all of his faults, you know, many people said that we were moving towards a socialist government. Well, it's like, well, the socialist government is the safety net to try and help people like our last caller. You know, it's like I contribute to the larger good. I have insurance, but I actually pay money to make sure that my fellow Americans have it. That's not the system that Donald Trump wants. That's not the system that he said he would deliver. So the fact that people voted for him to give them something that they could have gotten under the previous administration, I just don't understand.
Since we're talking about the Affordable Care Act, I wanted to ask you both about what's happening within the GOP majorities in Congress about trying to figure out what to replace the Affordable Care Act. Mary Kate, it seems like the president has really put Congress in a bind, saying we're going to repeal it and we may replace it that same hour, that same day. If you read the reports coming out of this retreat over the weekend in Philadelphia, there's a lot of worry about taking on what may end up be calling, I think, as one member of Congress said, Trump care.
I think there's great consternation. The feeling, you know, probably 2 months ago here in Washington was that if he was smart, he would get a couple of quick bipartisan wins through the Congress after he does these executive orders. He's going to have to pivot to a congressional strategy. And the one that everybody thought he would start with would be some sort of tax reform or an infrastructure bill that did not add to the deficit. And there's ways to do that. And that has sort of gone by the wayside. And everybody assumed that Obamacare would take him, the replacement of Obamacare would take him most of the year. And maybe by the end of 2017, we'd see something on the table. Well, then he came out and said he wanted it the same day. And you talk about people's, you know, hair on fire. The Republicans are like, what? So there's quite a bit of consternation over how to pull that off, because that is a huge order. I think the latest I've heard is they will definitely keep the good things like the pre-existing conditions ban and that your child up to age 26 can stay on your policy. And what they'll try to fix is the things that are driving the costs so high, the prescription drug costs and the premiums so high, and try to figure out how to manage the risk pools better so it's not all sick people. So we'll see what they come up with. I don't think it's going to be a wholesale rewrite. I think they'll pick and choose and just do what they can.
I have to say, Christina, I'm puzzled. They've had 8 years, years to figure out what's going to replace this. And here they are in, as Mary Kate says, you know, with their hair on fire, trying to figure out what does this tell us?
Well, I think they spent a lot of their time and political capital just being the party of no and didn't really spend a lot of time figuring out what their ideas actually were. I don't think many Republicans actually thought that they were even going to be in this position, especially with a candidate like Donald Trump. So here they are. They find themselves in a position where now they actually have to have ideas and a plan forward as opposed to just being a party of obstinance. It's a little more difficult when you actually have to put something in motion.
You probably don't disagree with that, Mary Kate.
I was for the whole 8 years saying stop voting to repeal 40 times and tell us what you want instead. You know?
Get it right.
Yeah.
Okay. Call here from Kathy in St. Paul. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Hey, what are you thinking about it as you listened in on the conversation?
Well, I just think that the caller said something about how we're just, you know, acting like, well, yeah, our hair is on fire and like we're overreacting or something, but really, all the things that we worried about, like someone like myself who did not vote for him, all the things we worried about that he would be way out there. I mean, I felt like I was told, like, well, this is just campaigning and it's not going to be that bad and give him a chance. And yet he's doing everything that we would have thought was kind of crazy. And
well, he's doing what he said he was going to do, isn't he, Kathy?
Well, more than that. I mean, he's so insular. Like, there's no call for unity. There's no, you know, like, it's all over the top and very quick and not really listening or wanting to bring the country together. I've never seen that before. I mean, I would love George Bush to be back in office right now, and I did not vote for him because it was normal. He called for unity. He didn't, in the face of 9/11, he never, ever attacked, you know, the Muslim community in our country. Mm-hmm. I do not understand this kind of a presidency. And of course it's scary to people and they're going to react. They're not going to stop reacting.
Mary Kate, he is doing what he said he was going to do, right?
What
do you think? A lot of voters didn't take that seriously or what?
Well, I think that's part of it. And I think part of it is back to the beginning of our conversation, we were talking about sort of lack of staff. One of the things that, for example, on this Muslim thing, which I don't even like to call it a Muslim ban because I have the legislation right in front of me, the executive order, and the word Muslim is nowhere in it. But hashtag Muslim ban is number one on Twitter this morning.
I know, but
and I
mean, I
think that's a misnomer.
Can we talk about that for a second? Because I think that's important.
Yeah.
You must not believe what Giuliani has been saying, and you must look at that list of countries and then see the exception for Syrian Christians and come to a different interpretation, which is what?
Yeah, my advice to him, if I had been on the White House staff, you know, over the weekend, would have been, now maybe this is 2020, knowing what the uproar is, but I would have said, you have to have an address to the American people, and you need to lay out what Dana Perino calls an ounce of prevention. She's the former White House spokesperson. And make the case before you do it that the word Muslim's nowhere in here, that this is a follow-on on the 2015 Terrorist Prevention Act. That's where the list of seven countries came from, the Obama administration and Congress, and that that we are a nation of immigrants, but we are also a nation of laws. That is a direct quote from Bill Clinton, his 1995 State of the Union address, where he called for, you know, immigration restrictions. And talk about the number of people who are getting caught up in this and how many of them have already been cleared. And this is a this is not jailing people. This is not unnecessarily detaining them for months on end. This is a stepped-up routine clearance process to make sure who these people are. And he should have said that in advance. And I don't know why the White House staff didn't say to him, you got to lay this out before you just spring it on people. There was the other problem, too, was the White House correspondents who were on the Sunday shows over the weekend said that the order came out, and it came out on Friday, and it took 2 hours to get a copy of the order to the White House press corps, more hours before they would say which countries were affected, and a full day before there was an actual briefing. And then by Sunday is when they reversed the order on the green cards, also never in the executive order. It was all a misunderstanding.
Let me ask Christina this, since we've got a couple minutes. No problem. Is it, Christina, more about the fact that President Trump didn't explain this well to the American people? I take Mary Kate at her points here. Or is it what it actually says and does for you?
I think it's both, right? I mean, one, there's the lack of communication and articulation of ideas, which is, you know, we have a president who refuses to have legitimate press briefings and wants to communicate with the public via Twitter. And I think that that's going to be something that the media and the public have to decide. Is this, you know, appropriate communication from the leader of the free world? You know, I think that a grown man, an adult of any stripe, should actually have to have coherent and cogent thoughts to the American people in more than 140 characters, especially going to the substance of the issue, something that is this detailed or should be detailed and will affect so many millions of people. I mean, we see this. I'm a professor. We see this at the university level. We have students who are stuck abroad. We see people who can't get here to see loved ones who are, you know, quite ill. I mean, to say nothing of, you know, this is what plants the seeds of people actually hating our nation, considering the seven countries that are on the list actually have no history of having any violence toward Americans ever, right? I mean, these aren't countries where Donald Trump is doing business, so we see that, you know, he's not that interested.
I think that's unfair.
These are facts. Like, you're entitled to your own opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts, right? These are facts. Donald Trump does not have business in these countries, and these are countries that he's put on the list. There are zero countries that he has financial dealings in. This also goes back to the quantity and the quality of the substance of his communication. We still have not even seen his taxes. This is something he said multiple times he would do. He said he'd have press conferences multiple times.
Let me do this.
This is a man who actually does not ever follow through on his orders.
I have 90 seconds left. Mary Kate, you said it was unfair. I have 90 seconds for you on that.
The point of fact that the list of countries came from the 2016 legislation that were countries of concern to the Obama administration and Congress. Now, maybe it's true that Donald Trump doesn't have dealings in those countries, but that's not where the list came from. And so I think we have to defer to the Obama administration that had a lot more experience in this.
Except that I'm confused, Mary Kate, because there are countries that clearly you would imagine. But that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, the 9/11 countries.
Exactly.
Lebanon, Saudi.
Well, if our president actually communicated with us, then we might know these things, right? I mean, this is a man who's literally still in his tower of gold and refuses to talk to the American people.
Christina Mary Kate.
You should explain why those countries are not on the list.
I am always really grateful for the insight that you bring us. Thank you so much. Really good to have you on the show. Please come back.
Thank you.
Mary Kate Carey with us from the University of Virginia, and Christina Greer with us from Fordham University. Yep, the conversation on politics continues. I just want to remind you again, we talk about these issues of identity on Indivisible Radio. I'm on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. Some of you that have been calling in during the day, geez, I'd love to have your calls at 7 on Thursday night, too.